and we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
Hi, I'm Ann Northrup.
Exciting show for you. There are a record number of LGBTQ candidates running for public office throughout the nation. And our guest is former Houston Mayor Anise Parker, president of the Victory Fund, which is dedicated to expanding LGBTQ representation in government at all levels. She will tell us about key races, some in surprising places.
Well, speaking of surprising, did you know that Rudy Giuliani's daughter, Caroline, is bisexual and is coming out strong for Joe Biden?
More bad news on Amy Coney Barrett and an update on fighting back against Republican court packing.
And Anise's favorite governor, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, gets the state's social work board to end protections for LGBTQ and disabled people.
In Indianapolis, a trans woman was murdered. And we'll hear more from trans activist Kendall Stevens, who was bashed in her own home in Philadelphia this summer, and how the police responded.
And a game for you to play at home right now. We'll tell you what country's legislature now has the highest percentage of LGBTQ people in the world. If you can guess before we get to it, give yourself a pat on the back.
Sorry to read about the death of Joyce Wallace, Dr. Joyce Wallace, an early AIDS activist.
Yes, and very, very active. And the Tony nominations for the truncated 2019-20 season are out, although we don't have a date for the ceremony yet, but so are a bunch of the nominees. We'll talk about that.
But we welcome now Mayor Anise Parker, 6 years the mayor of Houston, the first out mayor of a major U.S. city. In 2010, she was named by Time magazine as one of the 100 most influential people in the world. And she's been involved in the Victory Fund since its founding and is now its president. And she's been in the LGBT movement since 1979. So welcome.
Thank you. Very happy to be with you.
And before we get to the detailed rundown of the most interesting or prominent LGBTQ candidates, let's take a couple of seconds to talk about voting in Houston and Texas. Another scandal today about trying to cancel votes by drive-in voters. And we all know the story of the one drop ballot box in Houston. Are people in Texas going to be able to vote?
People in Texas are voting in huge numbers. We're way ahead of previous years in terms of the volume of early vote this early. The question is, are these new voters or are these the usual voters who are just coming in early because they're afraid of lines at the polls and of efforts to disenfranchise them? This has been an incredibly frustrating year, but it actually started before this year. In previous years, you could in Texas, we don't have party registration, but you could go in and vote for one party's candidates or the others, straight ticket voting. Mm-hmm. So the last legislature took that away. This is the first year we haven't had straight ticket voting because the Republican legislature was afraid that Democrats would dominate if they were allowed to continue. So this is an ongoing process, but the absurdity of having one drop-off location for an absentee ballot. Harris County, Texas is 1,800 square miles. And people in other parts of the country don't understand the scale of Texas. And there are millions of voters in this county and one drop-off site. And then, as you said, our election administrator has been trying to find ways to help people during the pandemic. And every time he comes up with a great idea, like, let's have everyone have the opportunity to vote by mail. He gets sued, and the state weighs in and tells him he can't do it. So it is it's a little bit of a whack-a-mole process down here, and a great idea to allow ballot access, and then we're struck back. Now, I have to say, Victory is a nonpartisan organization. We endorse candidates across the political spectrum, but I have yet to see a Democratic administration trying to prevent access to the ballot.
And let's try to get a realistic answer to this in a nonpartisan way. Is there any chance of the Democrats winning the state of Texas this year for their presidential and other candidates?
I wouldn't bet my house on it, but I think it's an even bet right now.
Okay.
If you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I wouldn't have said that. I would have said that we win everything down ballot, and the state races, that probably John Cornyn goes back to the Senate. But Biden is leading by a point or two in Texas, which is unheard of, and Cornyn. So you have a presidential Democrat and a Senate Republican both in the lead in their races, barely. So it is absolutely a toss-up right now. And all of the energy and momentum in the down ballot races is on the Democratic side. So I don't know whether you can say we're going to go blue, but we're going to be heavy purple.
Let's get to the work of the Victory Fund, which is about electing out LGBTQ candidates. And how long has the Victory Fund been in business?
30 years next year.
And you were there at the founding, yes?
No, I was an activist and I was around, but I actually served on the board in about 1994. So I've been around and certainly was aware of Victory.
Yeah. So, and again, why don't you state the purpose of the Victory Fund?
It's very straightforward that we believe our democracy is stronger when it is fully representative. And that means it has to include LGBT leaders in public office. We are Victory Fund, which is a PAC that endorses candidates for office, and Victory Institute, which is a C3 training organization, which does candidate training and a number of other really amazing programs.
So there is a record number of LGBT candidates this year at all levels around the country. What's your analysis of that? How did we get there?
In 2018, we saw a record number of LGBT candidates, which we dubbed the Rainbow Wave. But there were more women, more candidates of color, more candidates who were foreign-born and naturalized than ever in American history. Well, those numbers just kept growing. So we went from the Rainbow Wave to, I would call, the Rainbow Tsunami. There are more than 1,000 candidates that we've been able to identify across the country this year who are LGBT, and there are more than, I think there are about 580 or so still on the ballot and still contending.
But now, they run the gamut from someone like no longer on the ballot, but very successful Pete Buttigieg, who immediately became beloved, to others who are being attacked with death threats and homophobic, transphobic, horrible attacks. You certainly didn't have an easy ride as Houston mayor all the time. You lived through some rough waters. Tell us what's going on in terms of attacks and how rough it is out there for candidates these days.
So Victory's the only national organization that plays in every state and at every level. And we are, as I said, we're nonpartisan. So we have candidates across the political spectrum. And I've been involved in politics since the mid-70s. I haven't seen a year this bad in decades in terms of the overt attacks on LGBT candidates. It's not dog whistles. It's not subtle. It is direct and overt, and it is coming from the left and the right. And I think that some of that, I don't think, I absolutely put some of that at the feet of Donald Trump and the way he has normalized vitriol and personal attacks in campaigns. But this is also an election that where there are a lot of very close, hard-fought races, and you know, people are pulling out everything possible in order to win. The worst race right now in the country, actually the worst race this year, has been the congressional race of John Hobley against Fred Upton in Michigan. 15 years ago, when John was a college student, and in the subsequent years, he's had a great career as a state rep, but he was a blogger, and he wrote about a whole range of issues, and the supporters of Fred Upton have taken blog posts from 15 years ago, taken them out of context, turned them on their heads, and put out in people's mailboxes and electronic media ads that John is a pedophile, that he supports drug use. It's ugly and vicious. They actually referred to him as a sexual predator. So it's not only about the impact on John's race to have these lies spread about him. It's the fact that it resurrects ugly tropes about gay men as sexual predators. We had something actually that's, you know, his Republican opponent doing it to him, but Alex Morse ran for Congress in Massachusetts, and in the Democratic primary, he was attacked not by his opponent, but by a group of college Democrats who were hoping to get jobs with the incumbent. And so they spread lies and misinformation about Alex, again, sexual predator. And that feeds into so many other things that are used against us, not just in politics, but in our daily lives. And our struggle to have full civil protections in this country.
I remember when that happened to our friend Danny Drum, who's a longtime city council member in New York. When he first ran, his desperate opponent, again, put in mailboxes things that said he had a prostitution arrest when he was 16, you know, that kind of stuff. He overcame that and he won. So let's give people some hope here. You talked about the John Hoadley race. This is Michigan 6, House District. Fred Upton, longtime incumbent. Latest poll has Upton about 6% up. What are the hopes there?
It is a very Republican district. But I'm going to say first that victory doesn't do policy. We don't do lobbying. We're about people. And we believe we put the right people in the right place, they'll do the right thing. So we're all about the individuals who are running. And win or lose, when we have people who stand up from our community and have good races, they make change. Now, they make more change when they're in office and actually can work on the policy piece. But the running is important. So it's important to challenge in seats that are uphill. This has been a longtime Republican seat. John is an outstanding candidate. He would not be as far away if they hadn't gone hard negative and created these lies about him. But his race pushes out people who will also vote up ticket. And, you know, this is a swing state in the presidential race as well. So there are implications far beyond this particular, the outcome of this particular race. We think he has a shot. We have a viability standard at victory. You know, those more than 1,000 candidates running, we've endorsed 381, I believe. And so we look hard at it's not enough to be openly LGBT. It is necessary for us to endorse you, but it's not enough. You have to have a path to victory. We believe he has a path to victory, but it has been made harder by these vicious homophobic attacks.
Better shot in Texas with Gina Ortiz Jones. Back in your home state in Texas 23, she's 1% up in that race.
She should be farther up. She's so much better than her opponent. She ran 2 years ago and lost by less than 1,000 votes. in a race that wasn't called for, I think, a week after the election because they were counting individual votes in small towns. She's an amazing candidate. This is the definition of a swing district. It flipped back and forth a few times. And she actually, in my view, the strength of her race the last time forced the incumbent to decide not to run again. She, an amazing personal story in addition to being a heck of a campaigner. She's a first generation American. I believe she was in the Air Force. She served in, as a national security advisor. Grew up in the district and came out of poverty. She's we're excited, and we absolutely believe that Gina is going to be successful this time. Should have been the last time. This is her time to do it.
And as we go through these candidates, and we're going to go to a few more, we should just remind our viewers that they can find out about these and other candidates by going to your victoryfund.org website. And begin to investigate candidates all over the country that they might want to.
Yeah, it is a little bit hard to single out individual candidates. Like when you ask me which ones my kids do I like the best. Yeah, I have a favorite. They all know that, but I'm not ever going to say it. So it's hard to pick.
People to do research.
That is what Victory does. We as an organization, we're primarily a bundling organization, which means that we provide you information about the top candidates and their races. And as I said, we put a viability lens on, and then we invite you to choose among those nearly 400 candidates, the ones that you think most align with your views. And, you know, you can choose school board candidates or congressional candidates or state house candidates. State houses are where we as an organization pay the most attention, simply because bad bills start in state houses and can metastasize, and we can really build a wall against the bad stuff if we have a progressive legislature in state houses. So
let me remind our viewers again, this is the most critical election in 10 years for state legislatures, because they will draw their own lines for the next 10 years, and they will draw the U.S. House lines for the next 10 years. Republicans did a great job on that in 2010 when we were asleep. So wake up and elect progressive legislatures. Tell us, you also endorse transgender candidates. You've got one in a Wisconsin State Assembly District 15, Jessica Katzenmeier.
Yeah, we're excited. Actually, you know, we elected our first trans legislator, Danica Rome, just in 2017. So in 2018, we added three more. This year, we have five trans candidates on the ballot. So we hope we can at least double the number of trans legislators, because we want to keep our incumbents and add to the number. But Jessica Katzenmeier, running in Wisconsin, she would be the first out trans person to serve in the Wisconsin legislature. This is a close race, but she's an excellent candidate, and her numbers look good right now.
And we got
we have trans candidates running in interesting places. Here's Wisconsin, not necessarily a all that progressive, but we have a trans candidate in Kansas as well. What we know is that it doesn't matter where these races are, if we have good candidates and they're a good fit for their district, they have a shot.
And you got two state house races in Tennessee, Tory Harris and Brandon Thomas.
Correct. Tennessee is one of those places where we have never elected someone to the state legislature. And we have two opportunities with Tory and Brandon. Not only are they out gay men, but they're also African-American. So we have an opportunity to add diversity in several ways to the Tennessee legislature. And I think one's in District 90. I'm going to look this up. One's in District 90 and one's in District 49 there. But there are five states that have never had an openly LGBT legislator. So Alaska, Delaware, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. So we can knock one of those off.
Yeah, right. Delaware, we expect to elect some.
Delaware, we expect to elect
Sarah McBride.
Sarah McBride, absolutely one of our trans candidates that we've endorsed going into the Senate. And there's name escapes me. There's LGBT candidate for the House there as well. So we're slowly knocking them off.
You can't keep the names of all 381 candidates at the top of your.
If I weren't staring into the camera, it would be right on the tip of my tongue. But
look, we can barely remember our own names on a daily basis. Look,
I'll have to apologize to that candidate,
and I'm sure you'll have to. But we're going to show. I don't think we should take the time right now. We'll show because we'll let you go at some point today. The new mayor, temporarily at least, of Anchorage, Alaska, Charmaine McGuffey, is also very impressive. So tell us a little.
No, that's a sheriff candidate.
Sheriff candidate. I'm
sheriff
sorry.
Candidate. Big mayor. Our biggest mayor's race in the country is the mayor of San Diego, where we have Todd Gloria locked in a hot Democrat on Democrat race out in California. But Charmaine McGuffey is running to be the sheriff of Hamilton County, Ohio. She was actually fired from her job for speaking up against the pro-Trump Democratic incumbent. She ran against him, took him out. She has a Republican challenger now, but she actually will join a very proud line of lesbian sheriffs. We've had,
of course,
two in Texas, Margo Frazier and Lupe Valdez. We have Mitzi Yohannik in Washington State. There are actually two lesbian sheriff candidates running right now. Kristen Graziano in Charleston, South Carolina, and Charmaine McGuffey in Hamilton County, Ohio. But we're profiling Charmaine because she was fired because of her standing up on racial justice issues and on LGBTQ issues. This is an opportunity to make a statement. And we are part of law enforcement, and in this moment of reckoning on racial justice, having people who are willing to step up and speak out for change in law enforcement is important. And I don't know what it is about men in law enforcement, but we have one male sheriff, but women have just outperformed in those sheriff races for some reason.
We like to fulfill stereotypes. I see that I was conflating her with Austin Quinn Davidson, who is now the acting mayor of Anchorage because the mayor resigned. So we now have a lesbian mayor of Anchorage, Alaska.
We have a picture of her with her wife.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent.
Vote for who has wore a T-shirt saying, vote for my wife.
I've gotten my wife to wear one of those. I don't know.
Are you going back into electoral politics?
I don't know. I get asked that a lot. I love the work I'm doing at Victory. It allows me to have a much broader reach in terms of helping people achieve office. I was in office for 18 years and absolutely loved it. But I also felt I made a difference. And this allows me to help other people have that same experience.
Well, I have to say that we were extremely impressed and proud that Victory Fund did stand up for Alex Morse so quickly in Holyoke, because there he was trying to unseat a very established incumbent and a leader in the House. And for Victory Fund to come in and say, no, this is wrong, he's been mistreated, was inspiring and heartwarming. So thank you for that.
So to finish off, what is your message to what LGBTQ people, voters, should be doing right now, last week and a half?
Well, they should already be informed on who's on the ballot in their communities and making plans to vote if they haven't already voted. But they also need to, you know, visit our website, look at, we don't do policy, but we do people. And there are nearly 600 really amazing candidates across the country, almost 400 on our website who are worthy of their support and interest. And make sure that you find an opportunity to stay engaged with what's happening in terms of LGBT candidates. Because when we win, we make a difference. But just the fact that we run and do well also changes hearts and minds. That's why we do this work.
And I think you should be recruiting Caroline Giuliani to run for.
and bookmark. Yeah, possibly. Bookmark thevictoryfund.org for the day after the election, and you'll find out how these candidates did.
Yeah, get those results up there.
We hope the day after the election, because that is going to be one of the problems this year. There is so much more absentee balloting, voting by mail, that some races won't be decided. But I have one more website I want to give you, and that is outforamerica.org, something else that Victory maintains. It is every current LGBT elected official. It'll take us probably a month or so to get it completely updated with the for the new results. But there are about 850 serving elected officials out there. And educate yourself on who's in your community. You can go in and ask by state. You can go in ask by ballot, level of office. We are everywhere. We're serving everywhere. And our candidates need support.
We will put that in our email blast, that website. And if anybody out there wants to be on our email list for the weekly notice, just go to our website and sign up for it. Thank you very much, Mayor Parker.
Thank you.
Happy to do it. Okay. Anytime.
Okay. Good. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Should we take a look at that video from Charmaine McGuffey, the police chief candidate in Hamilton County, Ohio?
I loved it. I hope you will, too.
It's great.
Yeah.
I've never been an insider. I wasn't just a woman working in law enforcement. I was a gay woman. That made me a target, a threat. But overcoming the impossible, well, that's what I've done my entire life. I'm Charmaine McGuffey. By the age of 14, I knew that serving the community as a police officer was what I was called to do. I worked my way up the ranks in the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office all the way to major, first and only woman to achieve that rank. I took our jail from the worst ranked in the state of Ohio to the top ranked. I wanted to move the sheriff's office in one direction, towards reform and rehabilitation. But the current sheriff, he wanted something different. His way, excessive force, harassment, and zero accountability. When I spoke up, I was told to go with the flow. I refused to stand by silently, and ultimately, it cost me my job. I decided to run against him in the primary, and I won. I'm running for sheriff because I know we can do better. In my 33 years as a police officer, I've seen justice and I've seen injustice. But I also know what it feels like to be targeted for who I am and not for something I've done. And there are systemic issues that we can no longer ignore. My opponent, Bruce Hoffbauer, he has a history of excessive force. He shot and killed an unarmed black man. He served on a unit that was notorious for terrorizing communities of color. He's unfit for the job and for this moment. From notes on the bathroom door to abuse at the very top, I've taken on bullies like him my entire career. I stood up to homophobia and sexism. I've torn down barriers that were designed to keep people like me from ever getting a fair shot. The courage to do what's right and just, no matter how difficult it may be. That's what history is calling us to do, and that's the kind of sheriff I'll be.
People who are tough on behalf of average people.
Me too. I also want to show you that I have my mail-in ballot prepared. correctly in the envelope with the barcode showing through. But my plan is to go vote early this weekend or next week in New York. And if the lines are too long or it's too chaotic, I will drop this in the drop-in box. Otherwise, I will vote in person.
Mine has already been accepted and validated. I mailed it in a month ago.
I hope it gets counted. But early voting.
None of those ballots get counted until after the polls close in New York. But they do.
Exactly why I'm going to try to vote early. Okay. Early voting starts in New York this
October weekend. October 24th through November the 1st.
Correct. And there's...
You can Google it, find out where you have to go to a certain site. That's, you know, it's not your regular site usually. And like for us, it would be Madison Square Garden.
Well, that's where I'm headed. But there is also early vote. There's a march in Hollywood, California, on the 24th that is a sort of march to the polls. Equality voters to the polls, 9 a.m. Saturday, the 24th in Hollywood, California.
Let's keep talking about politics. If you saw the forums with the presidential candidates this week, and again, we're not covering, we're too early for the debate if it ever comes off on Thursday night. But Biden got asked a question by a mother of a transgender child, and he did very well. And he also issued a subsequent statement on the epidemic of violence against transgender and gender nonconforming people, obviously decrying it. I haven't heard anything similar from the president.
Oh, please. And Biden says he will prioritize prosecuting violence against trans people and that he will empower trans and gender nonconforming people. This may be partially why Caroline Giuliani, daughter of the monster Rudy Giuliani, who came out a couple of years ago as bisexual, Caroline, not Rudy, and Caroline is a filmmaker and making videos about the LGBT community, but she has now come out publicly for Biden very strongly saying we have to get rid of Trump, and congratulations to her. I love all these kids of the monsters.
She calls her father a sycophant, and she confronted her father once about these issues, and she said, you don't get to call yourself benevolent on LGBT issues just because you have gay friends, but don't support gay marriage. And she said he fired back with the intensity fit for an opposing politician rather than one's child. And she reminds us, as I think we all know from watching the world, we're hanging by a single slipping finger on the cliff's edge, and the fall will be fatal. If we remove ourselves from the fight, our country will be in free fall. That is what we're up against.
Well, and the free fall is starting with the coming confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett, who is just less than a week away, probably, from confirmation to the Supreme Court.
Well, she lied during the hearings. She said she didn't know that Alliance Defending Freedom was anti-LGBT. That's all they are. That is all they do. So that's a lie. She spoke to them and was paid by them multiple times. The CEO attended her Rose Gardens ceremony. Was confronted about their anti-LGBT bigotry in 2017 by Al Franken during the Senate hearing. And she lied then, too.
Well, and the Republicans don't care. All they care about is filling that seat on the court.
And I love what Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, said this week, which was, you know, you Republicans are on the rule of because we can. Don't come back to us next year if we happen to have power and try that, because it just doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's, there are two things that need to happen, by the way. You know, I'm all for expanding the court, and I hope the Democrats have the guts to do that. There was a long article in the Washington Post about all the legislation the Democrats could pass that could stand up to the Roberts Court and all their bad decisions. They just have to get moving, and they do have to get rid of the filibuster.
A lot of legislation could overcome bad or potentially bad decisions in the
Supreme
Court.
Week, Jim Obergefell, who helped us get through a Supreme Court case, same-sex marriage rights, did a joint release against Barrett with Rick Hodges, who was the defendant in that case, as the the former director of the Ohio Department of Health. That's who Rick Obergefell had to sue to get his marriage recognized, and they did a joint release.
Well, more and more is coming out about Barrett and her past decisions. She only has 3 years on the federal appeals court, but she did things like overturning a lower court decision on a prison guard raping an inmate, a 19-year-old girl who was in prison, repeatedly. And Barrett said the girl could not sue the state because rape was not part of the prison guard's duties.
It's unfathomable.
And she, of course, supports all these college rapists who Betsy DeVos says are getting a raw deal from the colleges.
But the Merriam-Webster Dictionary now designates Barrett's use of sexual preference. They did this because of her, as widely considered to be offensive.
We also told you last week or the week before about how she had been on the board of the Trinity Schools, which are a far, far right Catholic organization, which doesn't want LGBT students or parents of students or teachers or anything. Well, the AP has now come out with a large story about that. So that's finally getting some larger attention, because how many people listen to Gay USA? But they did a terrific story on it. I'd love to think that would make a difference, but it won't.
And by the way, speaking of the Catholic Church, you've all read this week, oh, the Pope came out for civil unions. Well, he did that when he was Bishop of Argentina to try to stop marriage. And if you read the story closely, he's not talking about welcoming gay couples in the church, and he's not talking about stopping people in the church who work for the church who get civil unions or marriages from being thrown out, fired. Nothing has changed. And
exactly.
Everybody's like, oh, Daddy said we, oh, it's so wonderful.
It's a PR move. It's a PR move.
Resist. Now,
well, exactly. But some people are saying it doesn't matter whether he means it. It doesn't matter whether the church changes. What matters is that the vast population of the world now thinks the Catholic Church approves of civil unions.
Which will help us. Which is a very regressive impulse. Change, good change does not come from above. It comes from you. Well, you know, we can elect Joe Biden, but the work starts the next day if you're going to make him do anything. It comes from us. All right.
Side note, Pompeo, our Secretary of State, speech to the Florida Family Policy Council, even his own people in the State Department are rebelling against this kind of action. Because they, of course, are just another right-wing anti-LGBT group.
He didn't end up going in person, but if he did, you were going to have to pay $10,000 to sit at his table. I mean, it's just disgusting.
Well,
but we got a good decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Not exactly a decision, but they denied cert, you know, certiorari, in the Edmo case where Idaho was ordered to provide gender confirmation surgery to a trans inmate. That was a Ninth Circuit ruling. There's a bad ruling on that out of the Fifth Circuit, but they didn't reconcile them.
Well, a bad decision by the State Board of Social Work Examiners in Texas. Governor Abbott has convinced them to delete the provision that social workers had to serve a broad population. Now in Texas, social workers will no longer have to serve LGBT people, disabled people. Governor Abbott said, well, they're not covered in state law, so why should they be covered in the social work rule?
Plus, they're covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act nationally, and because they very well may be covered by the Bostock decision of the Supreme Court this past year.
Also, they're human beings.
Oh, well, that's why we have a picture of Greg Abbott with Portia de Rossi and what's her partner's name? Ellen DeGeneres, because they were palling around last year and Ellen got a lot of criticism. That's also where she palled around with George Bush. And we said, you know, come on, these people hate you.
It would be nice to know that they at least said something, but there's no report of that.
Okay.
All right. Some of our weekly bad news. In Indianapolis, Indiana, another trans woman, Sarah Blackwood, shot dead while walking home from work at Kroger. She worked at a supermarket. She was known for being enormously helpful, quick to act to help people with their groceries, and beloved by her fellow employees, shot dead on the street.
She was actually going home from her second job at Long John Silver's, 29 years old, survived by her longtime partner, Avery Ellis Blackwood, died in surgery at the hospital. You know, I watched a documentary where they said, for a lot of trans people, when they transition, they can't keep the kind of profession that they had. And they end, I mean, these jobs are...
Tell it to Amy Stevens, who, you know, was working in the funeral parlor and transitioned. They got fired and had to go to the Supreme Court and died before she got the decision.
And we told you about Kendall Stevens, a trans activist who was attacked in her own home. She went outside the house and said, would you keep it down? So all these, I think they were young women, attacked her, got into her house and beat the crap out of her, hit her in the head with a planter. She blacked out, called her a man, a tranny, used the N-word. Her nose was broken in two places, ribs. But the police would not, she pointed at some of the people who did it and the police would not arrest them. One of them. And when she went to the police station, they laughed at her. They mocked her. She had to make, you know, it was just awful.
This was in Philadelphia. And yes, it was originally a group of young women who were then joined by their young male friends. And all of them attacked Kendall. Luckily, she survived.
Okay.
But we do have a death to note. Mario Aranda, 79 years old, dead of COVID. He was an immigrant from Mexico, a great activist, mostly in Chicago. He grew up in a Mormon community in Mexico and later in life came out, divorced his wife, had some kids, and ended up marrying his partner, Greg Hinson, who survives him.
In Chicago, he worked on the mayoral campaign of Harold Washington, the first black mayor. He was the publisher of a Spanish language newspaper. But he gave a wonderful quote 40 years ago about being a minority in the Mormon church. And he said, being a minority can be difficult. It makes for confusion at times, but there is growth in the overcoming. It is a temptation for a child to exchange integrity for acceptance, for one does get tired of being alone. And that kind of drove his life, and I think it helped him to come out eventually.
But that's why we preach frequently about the joy of community and why we join activist groups and why we feel so grateful and lucky to have ended up doing this work within the LGBT community, because we are not alone and because the inspiring pleasure we get from working with a community as a minority feels so much richer than being part of the majority.
It would feel better if we could be together again.
Speak for yourself.
All right. Tennessee, a new law that denies voter rights to protesters who camp out on state property. It makes it a felony, punishable by up to 6 years. It's an attack on the Black Lives Matter movement.
We have so much work to do in this country. We've been telling you that Jocelyn Samuels, executive director of the Williams Institute, is now on the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Brad Sears, who was the longtime ED at Williams, has gone back to that job as interim ED. Also, new study out of San Francisco of intersex people, couple hundred nationwide, half of them report that they're in poor or fair physical health and poor or fair mental health.
In Puerto Rico, they are now covering transition-related health care under its Medicaid program.
Yes.
And in Florida, the new indecent exposure law went into effect in October, which could be weaponized, especially against gay men. It makes a second offense a felony, punishable up to 5 years in prison. It allows police to arrest you without a witness. Somebody said he did it, and I'm arresting you. The sheriff's office in Hillsborough County, as we reported. All right.
International news?
We can, yes.
In Algeria, mass arrests at a private home party, which was described as a gay wedding in July. The court has now sent two men to prison. 33 men and 9 women who were also arrested were given suspended sentences. They were all college students. They were arrested because the neighbors complained.
In Russia, we told you about the crackdown on the Pussy Riot protests. Well, the European Court of Human Rights just ruled in a 2013 case that Russia violated the rights of LGBT activists to protest against discrimination. There was a demo outside the Duma, and they had eggs thrown at them. The police did not arrest the people throwing the eggs. They arrested the demonstrators.
In France, they have come up with a 42-point plan to attack anti-LGBT hate and discrimination. It's going to involve the education system, adoption rules, and banning conversion therapy.
In Gatineau, Quebec, girls have to wear skirts no shorter than 10 centimeters above the knee. But there is no...
At a particular school, the Collège Nouvelle Frontière.
Oui. But there is no equivalent rule for the boys who can wear shorts. So Zachary Paulin told 30 people that he planned to wear a skirt to school, and 100 boys showed up in skirts to protest. He called it a sign of resilience, solidarity, and support to the intersectional battle for gender equality. He decried the double standard. We have a picture of him showing how he felt about all this.
In New Zealand, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern was reelected she's very popular for having been compassionate and strict about COVID. And
this is the first time the Labour Party has had a majority government. That's a big deal.
So we have a picture of her and out lesbian, I think lesbian, Member of Parliament Louisa Hall at the Big Gay Out, which is their pride celebration. And if you had New Zealand in the contest, you are correct. They are expecting to have 10% of their parliament LGBT, more than any other country in the world.
Second place is the United Kingdom, where they actually have a lot of conservative members of parliament who are out.
And speaking of the United Kingdom, they do their census every 10 years, a year later than us. Ours, of course, is a massive disaster. But for their mandatory, they have a mandatory sentence. You get a census. You get fined if you don't fill it out. Next year, they're also going to add voluntary questions about sexual orientation and gender identity.
And for those of you going soft on the Pope, the Italian government is looking to pass a hate crimes law. They're getting a lot of pushback. But they're determined to pass it, include sexual orientation and sex and gender identity and gender expression as categories. And who's leading the opposition? The Catholic Italian bishops.
Yeah. So ask for a little action along with the PR.
Deeds, not words.
Well, if you insist on seeing this documentary, Francesco, about the Pope, where this quote comes from about civil unions, it's playing at the Savannah Film Festival this weekend on the 25th.
He does not come out. He does not come out during the documentary.
No. And it is a big PR job. All
in
right.
Russia, bad story from Russia. Officials are looking to arrest people of non-traditional sexual orientations who have had children through surrogacy. Now, surrogacy is legal. But the police arrested the top fertility doctors this year and accused them of child trafficking. So single gay men who have used surrogacy are fleeing the country. And the Duma is also considering a law to bar trans people from changing their sex on their birth certificates and require those who have already transitioned to change back. It's terrible.
Bermuda is offering a spot for people to move to for a year if they want to get away from the virus and maybe the rest of the world, too. It's worth considering.
The United Kingdom, BBC Strictly Come Dancing, that's a odd title, featured its first celebrity same-sex couple, Olympic champion boxer Nicola Adams and dancer Katia Jones, who has danced and won with a lot of men. But she's thrilled to be doing this. She's a Adams is a record-breaking Olympic boxer and the first out LGBT person to win Olympic boxing gold. And Katya is a Russian professional dancer. So anyway.
This is Dancing with the Stars UK. That's
yep.
The fact that they call it Strictly Come Dancing is a Britishism. All right, AIDS news. Very sorry to see that Dr. Joyce Wallace had died, age 79. She was one of the early AIDS doctors, and particularly focusing on sex workers and drug users. And not just their health, but or their medical health, but housing and health care. She was described by her friends as having an enormous kind heart, that she was a force of nature, compassionate, great sense of humor, very outspoken on these issues, as people were in those days, and a really important figure in the history of the epidemic.
She operated a care van offering HIV testing. She wanted to get people tested, especially people who worked on the streets. And she found out that 1% of Johns were infected, but 35% of the sex workers were.
The ACLU has just put out a new report on sex work and says that decriminalizing sex work improves overall public health and safety. And this is sort of a general observation about, crime and punishment, that when you help people, when you support them, when you decriminalize a lot of things that are currently criminalized, you actually improve the health of the community. So it's an important analysis by the ACLU. You can look it up on their site.
That's why we try to get rid of those sodomy laws, although they may be coming back under the Trump court.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are still 13 on the books.
I was fascinated to read something I hadn't known, even after all these years of knowing about the epidemic. The Journal of the American Medical Association Ophthalmology, their eye care journal, notes that gay men who have died, whose body parts are eligible for transplant, their corneas cannot be transplanted unless they have not had sex with another man previous to death for 5 years. For blood donation now, it's 3 months, but for corneas, 5 years. They have not updated that.
Are they worried about what those eyes have seen?
Very good, Andy. There has been no HIV transmission ever recorded connected to cornea transplants. And they say that by forbidding this, we are losing 1,500 to 3,200 cornea transplants in 2018 alone.
President Biden says he'll follow the science.
Well, good.
Entertainers? All right, Tony nominations.
All right.
There were 10 shows eligible this year instead of 34. And they didn't even do it in June. So anyway, it was cut short back in March. So The Inheritance was nominated for Best Play, Director Stephen Daldry. We have pictures of the actor John Benjamin Hickey, who plays the Trump-loving character, and Paul Hilton, and also Andrew Burnap there for featured act in a play, and they also nominated Lois Smith.
But the most nominations went to Slave Play, which has by a gay playwright, Jeremy O. Harris. We have a picture of him, too. And there are strong LGBT elements to this play. It was not my favorite. I don't think it was yours.
Nor mine.
Yeah.
Although Jesse Green loved it.
Well, I think people either loved it or hated it. And we, unfortunately, were not in the lover category. But it's
nice.
Yeah, I refuse to go again. But it got more nominations, I think, than any play in history, maybe because there were only 10 eligible. But it's expected to win a lot of awards.
The featured actors that we pictured there were Otto Blankson Wood and James Cusati, who played a gay couple. All right. And also Danny Burstein was nominated for a gay role in Moulin Rouge. I just learned that he survived a bout with COVID, coughing up blood for 2 or 3 days, came close to death. He said it felt like, I say this because we should avoid COVID. It felt like there was an 80-pound boy standing straight up on my chest. He had double pneumonia, and his two main doctors saved him. They were named Gandhi and Krishna.
Well, not only should we avoid COVID because of these horrible bouts people are having, but more and more we're hearing these stories of the long-lasting effects and the heart problems and strokes and,
I believe the president had it and Amy Coney Barrett had it.
And they're not out of the woods yet, evidently. But in terms of the Tonys, I was a little surprised to see they released these nominations, but they have not decided when the ceremony is going to be. Maybe December, maybe January, probably streaming. Who knows?
CBS is not carrying it. I haven't watched this yet. Have you? Someone Has to Die on Netflix. It's a family drama about gays in Franco's fascist Spain, with a lot of acting from people who were in the Almodovar films.
I just watched Pain and Glory, the last Almodovar film, which was a little quirky, but I actually thought it was his most kind of out film about himself. It's about an aging film director and his ex-lover and all of that.
And I watched the Chicago 7 film on Netflix, which was from about 1968, sort of Ann Northrup's generation. And Mark Rylance is Bill Kunstler, Sacha Baron Cohen.
Is that before your time, Andy, the Chicago 7?
Just a little bit. I graduated from high school in 1971, and I was not a child activist.
I'm not watching the Chicago 7 by Aaron Sorkin is because I do remember every minute of it, and I am not going to watch a bastardized version of it.
I am not an Aaron Sorkin fan.
Well, I loved Sports Night, his original series, which was very clever.
The West Wing, he did. I didn't see it on Broadway, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
A Few Good Men. Anyway.
Viewers recommended Someone Has to Die on Netflix, not the Aaron Sorkin thing. But I also, I'm struck by the fact that we're still getting lots of notices about film festivals. New Fest is still on, coming up in November, Doc NYC, which is a completely documentary film festival. That we'll tell you more as we get closer to that. Well, we are getting close to November, and we're only 10 days as we tape from this, 13 days from this damn election. Will be our last show before the election. Maybe we should dress up in some way. I don't know.
We should. We're down to our last 10 seconds. There's a lot of news I'm going to hold till next week. Or go to my Facebook page. I post a lot of these stories.
Well, we will see you next week.
Bye.